Coming up, we're going to be talking with local activist John Ngo. Today is, as we first aired this program, is Martin Luther King Day, and it's important to look back at this civil rights leader, but not at the sanitized version of his life that sometimes shows up in the media. And in fact, he was a radical. And if you look at the ZNet commentary by Paul Street on January 14th, it talks about how he actually tried to link domestic woes in America to militarism in Vietnam. He was really strongly against the Vietnam War, and he would be strongly against the Iraqi war here, the American war in Iraq also. With us on the air is John Earl, a local activist and also the publisher of OC Organizer, a website and a newspaper. Welcome, John.
Thank you.
You know, given the today that it's the anniversary of this is the day that commemorates the life of Martin Luther King, I think there are a couple of things that are noteworthy. One is how leaders get kind of torn down after they're dead. Look at the coverage of Cesar Chavez also, and but that's normal, right? I mean, people are human beings, so the media tends to elevate them to on a pedestal.
Well, I suppose that's right.
But I think that in King's case, it's also relevant today, given the controversy over domestic spying, that the FBI actually spied on his sex life and sent tapes of his extramarital affairs to his wife.
Right.
And so, I mean, it's not just regular Americans that were spied on in those days. It was also, of course, they were trying to smear him.
Well, we may see a resurgence of that now with Bush spying on normal or regular American citizens.
There's the NSA is supposed to be collecting information on Americans, even though the law says that they cannot collect that. And Bush is saying that he's the commander in chief and can do whatever he wants because he's fighting terrorism. And that Congress passed some legislation saying after 9/11 that gives him some power, supposedly. And also today I want to dedicate this show to Judge William Byrne Jr., who died last Thursday. He was the federal judge that was in charge of the case in the Pentagon, covering the Pentagon Papers. Pentagon Papers was a secret Pentagon study of the Vietnam War. And a couple of RAND researchers, Daniel Ellsberg and Tony Russo, released the whole file to different media, and the New York Times picked it up and actually published it. And the government freaked out and charged the two researchers with espionage and and leaking secret information, I guess. But in the trial, during the trial, the government tried to offer Judge Byrne the head of the FBI job, and also broke into Ellsberg's psychiatric office, trying to show that he was gay, supposedly. He's not, apparently. But they tried to get information on him. He said that actually at a conference here at UCI. At least he talked to me. That's what they were trying to dig up on him when they broke into his psychiatrist's office. And so when that revelation came out, and also some other stuff came out, the judge threw out the case against these two individuals. He was also he was also the judge in that was assigned to a case that I had that the ACLU defended me or represented me. Sorry, when I sued the CIA over spying on me. And Judge Byrne, I did actually have a hearing before him, and he was actually quite nice. He looked over at me and he said to the Justice Department lawyers that if they were spying on a demonstration I had attended, then he would not be pleased. And he ordered the Justice Department to explain every blacked-out section of some secret document that they tried to hide. They actually said there was a document, but they blacked out every sentence in it. And so under the previous case with John Wiener, he tried to get the Beatles, John Lennon's file. there was a precedent set where they had to explain each redaction, each blacked out line. And so Judge Byrne actually ordered the Justice Department to do that in the Zhang versus CIA case. And so I really admire him for doing that. And he's gone now. So let's go to the topic at hand. We're going to talk about anti-immigration kind of crisis here in the Southland, and the focal point of it is Costa Mesa. Why do you think it's why is it in Costa Mesa that this is happening right now?
Well, because of the recent closure of a day labor center that served immigrants, primarily Latinos, and because of a decision by the city council, which was originally proposed by the mayor, Alan Mansoor, to cooperate with or to work directly with Immigration Customs Enforcement of the Homeland Security branch of government to help deport so-called illegal immigrants who were charged with certain crimes. So that's part of the controversy. That's caused protests in recent months and off and on throughout the last year, but more recently, several times in the last month or two. And at the last council meeting, there was a big controversy because many people who showed up to protest these policies, who were clearly in the majority there that night, there were about 80 of them, versus about 40 from the, I guess that you'd call it the Minutemen faction. But the vast majority of people who were allowed to speak in public comments were from the Minutemen group. Or their supporters, and only a relative few were allowed to speak from the opponents of the mayor's proposal, and the other council, majority of the council voted for these proposals too, and one person was actually taken off the podium and dragged out of the council meeting, put in a chokehold, and arrested.
So what? So that was Coyotillo, right?
I'll try to pronounce his name. It's put it in front of me. It's Coyoto Tezcalipoca.
And you're saying that he actually wasn't allowed to speak. He was allowed to speak, but then he was cut off.
He was allowed to speak. He was cut off before his 3 minutes. That occurred when he asked supporters of his position to, in opposition to the mayor's policies, to stand. And when he did that, the mayor cut him off and then suddenly said, we're going to have a break now and go into our public hearing per our ordinance, which actually isn't an ordinance, it's a resolution, but that does not require the council to go to a public hearing at 7 o'clock, as he claimed, and it wasn't even 7 o'clock anyways, but says as close as 7 o'clock as possible. But he was clearly interrupted because he made this show of, or asked for the show of support from the audience for a position contrary to the mayor's earlier. Jim Gilchrist, the Minuteman co-founder, had done the same thing, only in favor of the mayor's policies, and was not admonished. In fact, he was thanked by the mayor. And there was a claim in the Orange County Register that, based on the reporter's interview with the mayor and a review of the tape, that supposedly the mayor had started to tell Gilchrist supporters not to stand, and then stopped himself from saying that when they quickly sat down. They did quickly stand and sit down, but the mayor made no such attempt whatsoever, and that's very clear in the transcript and by listening to the audio and watching the video.
So So there was kind of a discriminatory treatment there of the speakers.
Definitely, and as an individual, in that individual case, and as a group as a whole, there were many people who wanted to speak who were not allowed to enter the council chambers. And at the end, and after what happened, what actually happened is after the commotion, there was a huge commotion. A pandemonium broke out in the council chambers. I think that's the only way to put it. People were yelling at the mayor that he's a racist. One woman started to sing out loud, "We shall overcome," and got very dramatic about that. And then she was joined by the Minutemen group, who started singing "God Bless America." And then I rushed around to the side and to where they had taken Mr. Tezcatlipoca outside, and I couldn't really see a lot because I was a little bit behind a very angry crowd of about 20 or 25 people who were yelling at the police things like, "Why are you hitting him?" and so on. And I don't know if he actually was being hit or not, or kicked, or whatever. There were claims that officers can be seen kicking him on one of the news videos from the Spanish language stations. But the officers were clearly very frightened of the crowd. And anyways, from that point, they dragged him. And you can see this in some of the news videos. And in fact, I have a picture on the website of him being in a chokehold. They then dragged him into another building, and then one officer was on top of him. The other dragged him and the officer along the floor, and then they picked him up and carried him, whisked him away. And he was charged with one count of resisting an officer and violating two ordinances, city ordinances, regarding disorder during a meeting. Disorderly conduct, but if you look at the video, he did not resist physically. I mean, unless you can say that at one point he told the officer, "Don't touch me," but several times, but it seemed that he was saying as if he would walk himself. But there was no physical resistance whatsoever, and the scuffle, all that occurred after the meeting had already been closed, so he couldn't possibly have been guilty of disorderly conduct during the meeting, because the meeting had already been adjourned in any case.
What I didn't understand was, in this whole process, how come people were able to speak first and then they had a public comment?
They had public comments. They had wanted to, I guess, apparently had wanted to resume the start public hearings, but at 7 or so. Although there was no such announcement ever made, but after this commotion, the council chambers were closed down for anywhere from 20 to 45 minutes, depending on what account you go by, and then a decision was made by the captain and by the council that three people from each side would get to speak after the council resumed, and that would be it. And three representatives of supposedly of each side were chosen. I'm not sure how that occurred, but one speaker who was allowed to speak pointed out that it was not representative of the group. In fact, one of the speakers who was supposedly supposed to be speaking in contrary to the mayor's policies actually took a middle ground and wasn't on either side. So, and all three were males. That point was also made by one of the speakers. So the whole process was very biased. And this isn't the only time this has happened, although not to this degree. In the previous council meeting, Mr. Tezcatlipoca was speaking, and whether you like his choice of words or not, and the style, he referred, as is his constitutional right, to the mayor as a, quote, racist pig, unquote. And then at that point, that was about 1 minute and 45 seconds into his comments. At that point, he was warned, and then he continued to say, "Well, I'm just calling it as I see it." And so then he was whisked away again, although without the arrest or, physical problems. and then after the meeting was closed, he referred to the mayor using a deleted expletive deleted, and if you look at the court rulings and analysis of court rulings, for example, from the First Amendment Project and so on, it's pretty clear that not only are some of the city ordinances out of whack with the Constitution, and that they prohibit personal attacks and so on, which have been upheld in courts, but the First Amendment was rights of the speakers were violated, and certainly of Mr. Tezcatlipoca, and that the mayor also violated his own city's ordinance by causing disruption and the actually mayhem in the council meeting. The city council members are prohibited from doing that. It states that very specifically in the city ordinance.
You're listening to Subversity on KUCI 88.9 FM in Irvine. The opinions expressed on this show are not necessarily those of the Regents of the University of California, nor the management of KUCI. We're going to go to a clip and see if we can air this of the council meeting here, and this January 3rd, right?
January 3rd, that's right.
Our next speaker, please.
Hi, my name is Paulson. I'm from a long ways away. I'm Chicago. Whenever I heard this, I had to get in because it's fitting. I have been married 22 years to a man that came from Mexico. Okay, I lived in Mexico 4 years in the community. I'm a kindergarten teacher, and I'm a lingual kindergarten. It doesn't matter where you came from, what you are, if you have papers, good and bad, everybody, bad and every, to the things that I mention. Come, I really did. Is there such thing as Mexican? Because I was born here. Children are born Mexican American. They do have a father from Mexico. They are raised that way. And to hear people talk that because denying my the culture they should be or should and to the point in to put immigration law to police and force it, that's not wrong. How is anybody who's legal and who's not? An automatic Hispanics when stopped for whatever if they get stopped, you're gonna say you have let me see, you're gonna know if that what I want to know. It's going to be racial profiling. It starts here and go all over the United States, and it's really bad, really bad. Thank you very much.
Thank you. She's calling it racial profiling. And here's Coyo.
My name is Ali Poca, Native American. I'm here representing legal comments. And I ask you guys, or send to you guys, your minutes. Recently, on the source stated, the first enforcement is to move violent offenders to make this trigger. I don't have anyone against that. No way, shape, or move involved or focus of. However, this is absolute protection, absolutely no protection for the victims for trade immigration.
I'm sorry for that.
Furthermore, the police will be getting the authoritarian if it is by promoting the pressure profiling. So that do not have picked of any crime before be the. The deportation of these suspects also to consider the city council and how to accommodate the lives of their children. Therefore, as the collecting donation and the reversal of agreement, with collecting donation, the Yansor, Cannon, and Beaver, a plan for you, both of you guys, three of you guys, 5 minutes, and sent to man since out of Costa Mesa. We guys want to change craft of a cost for your plot. And you guys, love you. Make sure that we can be and we can to the end. We're not gonna let who does if anyone agrees with this plot.
No, do that. You know, we're gonna call
do
for
it.
A break here. Matter of fact, I'm up. It's time for
me this.
Call for a break and we return. We will have a public hearing per our ordinance. Conduct public hearings at 7 o'clock.
Sorry for the garbled kind of transmission.
Yeah, some of that was missing from both of the audios there.
This was the one I just played was from the City Council of Costa Mesa. Their audio on their official website. Sometimes it plays better, but sometimes it's garbled. So it just depends on the technology.
Well, and their video doesn't include everything that happened. It cuts off. and then goes to the mayor, and then it goes into some kind of music there when the controversy really gets going. You can see other videos of this, more complete videos of this, on my website at ocorganizer.com. And you'll see the link on the front, on the home page that goes to the article. These audios and videos are on there and can be seen quite clearly. Ironically, one of the videos, the video that shows a more complete version of what happened and really, I think, exonerates Tez Kalapoka, it was taken by a Minuteman supporter. And there's also, same as the video showing Mr. Gilchrist being allowed to do what Tez Kalapoka was not allowed to do.
So the you can go to John O's site to listen to see and listen to the transmissions from the city council meeting. Today there's an article in the interview with the police chief of Costa Mesa in the Orange County Register.
Right, I saw that.
Yeah, in which he says that this plan that that city council asked them to implement was having officers work with the immigration, customs enforcement people will not go into effect until probably fall.
Right, I think that's what it says here.
And
yeah.
He says that the officers don't really know what is aggregated offenses right now, because the law, this new regulation supposedly only allows deportation of people, or I guess detention and deportation of people for aggregated offenses.
Yeah, the supposedly serious offenses who have been convicted of a crime before. There needs to be some clarification over that. The claim is made that they can be deported without a trial, I'm not sure that that's correct, or that it's just that if they are arrested for a serious crime, they can be asked about their status, and then if they've been convicted of such a crime prior to that, then they could be deported. It's not clear. It's not been made very clear what actually is the truth about that. And one of the council members who voted against it tried to clarify that, and was told that they would have to be convicted first. But convicted in the past, or convicted on that particular crime? In other words, can they be, if they've had a crime conviction in the past, and then they're picked up on a new charge, can they just be whisked away without a trial on that new charge? And, you know, this whole thing is kind of stupid when you look at it, because if let's suppose somebody committed a very serious crime. Do we want to just deport them, or so that they would possibly come back across the border? What if they had committed a serious crime of violence? Wouldn't you rather have that person in jail?
Also, he admits that it may cause people not to report crimes because
he doesn't say that at all. No, he doesn't say that. He says.
He says, I want anybody who is a victim of crime to come to us in confidence.
Right.
Irregardless, he says, of our cross-designation.
Right.
To enforce federal immigration laws.
But the example that's usually given is of spousal abuse, and he's saying that, well, they wouldn't have to worry about either them or their husband being deported, because spousal abuse is not an aggravated offense. But the fact is that whether that's true or not, that's not going to be the understanding out in the community,
and
a lot of people who will be afraid. Not just the person who's the alleged victim in spousal abuse, but they also, even though they don't want to be beaten by their husbands, in many cases they don't want to have them deported either. I mean, there's you know how that goes.
Break up the family. Yeah.
Yeah. Right. So they may not report for a number of reasons.
He says that there are only 28 aggravated felonies in this interview in the Register that's in today's paper. But he also says, interestingly enough, I don't think my own officers know which crimes will be aggravated and which aren't. We'll have to make sure they learn.
Yeah, well,
I thought they know, and then, I thought they should know the law when they're already a policeman.
But there's a more important point out of that. If there's only 28, then why all this grandstanding over this issue and spending hundreds of thousands of dollars? One city report said up to $1.5 million for this program over time. That's ridiculous. When this chief is saying here in the interview. And by the way, there's no indication that the chief supports this.
Right.
It's only that he's enforcing it, as is his duty to do. So, but he's saying here they're already facing shortages for other serious issues, including not just Homeland Security, but including after-school programs for officers to be involved in that, and technological improvements that the police need, and so on. I mean, this is. A lot of money down the drain, and it's causing divisiveness in the community. And you know, so why is the mayor doing this? I think that's the mayor's the one who brought this forward, and a couple of the other council members went along with it. But the mayor's the one who's doing the grandstanding and getting the, you know, he's the center of the show on this. So why is he doing this? He introduced this on the same day of the election, the special election in the 40th Congressional District, where Jim Gilchrist was running and ended up getting 25% of the vote against Bill Campbell and the Democrat, I forgot his name, Steve Young.
Oh, yeah.
And so why did he do it on that night? You know, and now he's speaking this week, I believe, or the 25th, I think it is, is going to be speaking to the California Coalition for Immigration Reform, which is headed by Barbara Koh, and that'll be in Garden Grove at the Garden Grove Women's Club at 7:30 on the corner of Gilbert and Chapman. Now, why is he speaking to this group, which is about as right-wing and racist as you can get away with even in Orange County here today? This is Barbara Koh has called him a hero, and Barbara Koh in her literature, she's the head of the CCIR, refers to immigrants as savages and barbarians, illegal alien immigrants, savage barbarian murderers, assassins, and so on, and takes examples of a few crimes committed by undocumented immigrants and extrapolates to the entire population. They also have links to websites, a website, for example, that highlights the cases of sexual crimes by Mexican immigrants. And there's never a distinction. They're painted with this broad brush. There's no disclaimer like, well, this is only in a few cases. This is an epidemic, they are saying. And it's similar to the propaganda used against Jews in Nazi publications, to take, for example, a sexual predator and to extrapolate that to all Jews. And this kind of thing was done very common. I would like to ask the mayor, is he going to admonish Ms. Koh? Is he going to criticize Ms. Koh and this kind of blatant racism? And there are other examples of it too in their literature. If you go to one of their meetings, you'll see different kinds of literature that have this racist bent to it. So,
are you going to go to this meeting?
Well, I would like to. I don't think I would get through the door, however, at this point.
They might recognize you.
Well, I'm sure some of them would, and they would try to stop me, it really wouldn't be worth it to risk being, you know, beat up possibly or something. I don't know, but and Mr. Gilchrist, I'm sure, will be there. I don't know that for sure, actually, but he has been there before. He is the darling of the CCIR and who have been his main backer locally here.
Well, let's listen to him.
Yeah.
At the end of my speech, I ask the members of the project and they sit to stand a little applause and make a lot of noise, okay? We just stand. Thank you. I appreciate that. Mr. Blue, asking that you know, be the only speaker, else doesn't speak?
Yes, I'll be speaking on the Minuteman Project.
I would ask, if the other side is willing to do that, would be greatly appreciated. You do have a right to speak, but if a representative that could say how many, that would be appreciated. Continue.
So he was asking his supporters to stand, and then the mayor interjected and said, "Is anybody else speaking?"
Well, he said he wanted him interjected. He thanked him.
Yeah, right.
And then now the mayor can claim whatever he wants about what his intentions were, but that the words are what he said, and you know, you people respond to your words, and it's clear that he did not admonish Mr. Gilchrist at all. And he went on to clarify if speakers on both sides, representative of both sides, could speak rather than having everybody speak. And then went on to let Mr. Gilchrist have his time there. So, but anyways, there's a clear bias here on the part of the mayor. But I'm wondering what he's going to say as the hero, the new hero of the CCIR, this anti-immigration group, which really has a very hardcore following of hard right, radical right followers. I'm just wondering what he's going to say to them. And he's not the first politician to come, of course, and speak before the group. But it'll be interesting if we can hear that.
He's also coming, going with a congressional candidate, right? He's appearing with...
Yes, that's true. Who is running against Loretta Sanchez. I forget her name, but she's a woman running against Loretta Sanchez.
It's on the CCIR.net page.
Right.
And you can see more of Barbara Coe's material on that page.
Yeah.
You've interviewed Jim Gilchrist. What was he like in person?
Yeah, first let me just point out that the purpose of the Orange County Organizer is to bring news about organizing, progressive organizing, to Orange County. So it's from that perspective that the news is coverage. And I interviewed him for about an hour, and the transcript and audio sections of the audio of that are on the website as well. And actually, during that interview, he was very personable, as has been noted, he comes across. But he made statements there that seemed contrary to what his public image was, saying that he had, in fact, voted for Peter Camejo, the Green Party candidate, in 2003. he talked about the Walmart Nation and the abuses of corporations. And the need for bloodless revolution in Mexico and in the United States to remedy that. He questioned whether he really wanted to deport, quote, illegal aliens, unquote, or if he wanted a hybrid amnesty or whatever. He went back and forth on this and said he was conflicted. And there were some other things in there. And later on... just as an afterthought, when I was covering a debate that he was in during the campaign for Congress, I just asked him, I said, well, because he was now picturing promoting himself as a Reagan rock-ribbed Republican, you know, a fiscal conservative and blah, blah, blah. So I just asked him about these contradictions, you know, that he had voted for Peter Camejo, Green Party person. And he had said in my interview that he liked Peter Camejo, not on all his positions, but what he particularly liked was his call to redistribute the wealth. And so these are, you know, not Ronald Reagan-type opinions. And so I just asked him about that, just as an afterthought, because I thought, well, there wasn't much else going on in that debate. So let's try to get some more information here. And at first he denied it, and he went back and forth, and then he went berserk basically, and said I was a journalistic assassin, and the Green Party people were terrorists. And from that point, it just got worse, and he started accusing the Green Party people of being attempted murderers. He said they had been charged with, five of them had been charged in the Garden Grove demonstration, of attempting to murder one of his supporters, an 80-year-old woman, and that was just an outright lie. It was just a fabrication. And I kept asking him about that, and he kept going more wacko about it. That ended my friendly relationship with Mr. Gilchrist. Yes, but he's really an opportunist. conflicted one, maybe, but opportunist who's rising up, who's riding this wave of American, true American fascism that revolves around the anti-immigrant drive.
Is he being opportunist more than being used by other people?
Well, I think it's both. I think it's definitely both. And I don't know how long it's going to last, because I think a lot of people were around him, or some of the people around him at least, were very disappointed in his inconsistencies and his kind of craziness, and saw that as a sign of instability in him. A lot of his core followers, they don't care. You know, they just dismiss it as, you know, some kind of conspiracy between me and Representative Congressman Campbell, you know, who I have never had any kind words for either.
he's the one that actually won the election, right?
He won the election, and he used these remarks that were made in the interview, put them up on a different web, his own website, and used them. And so did a lot of conservative radio, or some conservative radio show hosts used it, and the Register and so on, to discredit and criticize Gilchrist. And
but Gilchrist still got like, what, 25% of the
vote? He got 25% of the vote. But that doesn't really, I'm not sure if that's going to amount to anything. You know, fact is, the Democrat got more than him. And that surprised me. But Campbell clearly was the winner by a long shot. And I don't. Gilchrist has said he's going to run for, maybe run for governor, maybe Congress, maybe something else. But I don't know where he could really go and actually win. But he could, of course, rile up people on this issue, as he has.
Why? Getting back to Costa Mesa, why do you think it's actually? I mean, beyond this ICE enforcement thing, I mean, why didn't it start in Santa Ana? You think it's because Santa Ana wouldn't put up with this?
Well, I don't think Santa Ana is. That I know of is trying to had closed a day labor center. I don't know if they have one, or I assume they do, or how many they have. But they hadn't apparently hadn't tried to interfere with the right of people to work and have a job and feed their families and so on.
They do station cops in the prisons that are, I mean, immigration people in the prisons in the jails there.
Yeah, and I thought that had been done in Anaheim too in the past, but I'm not sure exactly what the nature of their program is.
Yeah.
But supposedly, Costa Mesa would be the first to directly work to help deport
or to train the local police. Because
maybe in the Santa Ana jail, it's
the federal,
not their own police who are doing that. Yeah,
right. That's right. In terms of labor struggles, do you see? I know there's a lot of news now about Walmart, and a lot of cities are organizing against it, against the entry of new Walmarts in their communities. Has the tide turned against Walmart now, do you think?
Well, I guess it's not an entirely unrelated shift from the the Costa Mesa thing to Walmart, but I think the tide is starting to turn. I mean, you see the, you know, much more in the news media being critical of Walmart, and I think indirectly that's related to the struggle of day workers, day laborers, and laborers in general, and that's going on in this country. They're being assaulted from all angles, and question is, not just about what to do about the corporate and reactionary entities that are doing this assault, but what about the unions who are not stepping up? The union leaders of the mainstream unions who are not stepping up to the plate to do their part, and there's some of that. And to some extent they are, but to a large extent they are not. So. Why isn't organized labor out to? Why didn't they come to the Costa Mesa City Council meetings in the past to stand up for the right of the day laborers to have a place where they could get work? That seems to me to be a fundamental issue for any labor union.
Yeah, definitely. How about this whole issue of minimum wage then? Do you think other cities are going to, or some cities are going to try to implement that now?
Well, I think a lot of cities have, and there have been different campaigns at the state level, city level, and different ways of doing that. Here in California, the Green Party and others, including myself, are going to be pushing an initiative on the California ballot to raise the minimum wage to $8.75 with indexing to the cost of living, connected to the cost of living. So there would be cost of living increases along with that, as opposed to the attempt to co-opt or to divide and conquer by Arnold Schwarzenegger by proposing a $7.75 increase.
Why is that divide and conquer?
Well, because first of all, it has no cost of living increase. It's wholly inadequate, but it's tossing a bone out there. And if that's passed, then I'm sure the hope is that it would prevent something better from, you know, make it more difficult to get something better passed. Even something that's marginally better, like the Democrats were in the legislature voted for, which is to have $7.75 and index it. But we're saying $8.75 and index it. And it really ought to be $10 or $11.
A living wage, yeah.
Yeah, but, you know, that we need more people to get behind that. But $8.75 is a good start, I guess, and certainly better than $7.75.
Right now it's six something.
It's $6.75 right now. But not in all cases. There are exceptions to that.
Mm.
You know, where for example, fast food places can, for several months, can pay less than minimum wage to their workers.
While they're training?
While they're training, even though some of those fast food companies like McDonald's have more money than most countries in the world. So that's absurd. And that's not in this. I don't think that exception exists in this version.
California isn't actually the top payer, right? I mean, isn't Oregon one of the higher?
Yeah, and I'm sorry, I don't remember what that is.
Yeah.
Or Washington, Oregon or Washington?
Yeah.
They're higher. Yeah, but California is definitely one of the highest. I mean, the minimum wages in other states are abysmal. You know, and the national minimum wage is $5.15. Which is
the federal? Right.
You can't live on that. But the polls show that either one of these initiatives would pass, and of course
either what? What do you mean? Either one? Which ones?
$7.75 or $8.75. There's another group that's pushing to $7.75 with indexing too.
Which group? In California? You mean?
In California, yeah.
Not Green, but somebody else.
There's a part of this original coalition, I guess, and but most went for the $8.75. But there's one other issue I wanted to bring up,
sure.
More related to the Costa Mesa,
right.
And using the police to enforce immigration. What's being done in Costa Mesa is absolutely nothing compared to what would happen if an initiative being pushed by Assemblyman Haynes and by Congressman Campbell to create a border state police in California, or better put, a police state in California, it passes, because that would create a new police state agency, which would cost around $300 million at least, and would have the power to proactively enforce all immigration laws, to go into the workplace and round people up and put them in detention centers and ship them out, and would have the authority to commandeer police department resources, including officers, to do that. In other words, they would be able to tell the Costa Mesa Police Department that they have to enforce these rules. I think we ought to be paying more attention to that in our protests and all that, because that is a much more serious thing if that were to pass. And it would give the governor almost dictatorial powers, unchecked powers, to run this agency and to get money for it and so on. So this is something that the news media hasn't paid much attention to, and we'll be focusing on that soon in the Orange County Organizer. But But this is what Ray Haynes was, Assemblyman Haynes, was promoting. He's from Temecula. Was promoting last summer at the before the Barbara Coe CCIR group in Garden Grove, and this and he was one of the actually he was one of the original pushers of Prop 187 as well. He was very much involved in that, and is a hero of the Barbara Coe group because of that. So this will make the Costa Mesa thing look like nothing. You know, it'd be much more serious. Much more dire consequences.
They would create a whole new policing force.
That's right. That's right. And they would have the power to use any police, city's police resources, to ferret out illegal immigrants. And this would be has the goal of actually deporting everyone. Now, you know, so far, you know, there's really no. It doesn't seem realistic to think that 10 million, 10 to 11 million illegal immigrants are going to be, supposedly illegal immigrants, are going to be deported. You'd have to have, it seems to me, almost a fascist state to be able to do that. But here's an attempt to create that.
How about this other bill, or is it the same bill, that would criminalize would expand the definition of smuggling to include anyone who assists or directs an illegal immigrant to reside or remain in the U.S. Violations could lead to 5 years in prison.
Yeah, there's some more. There's very serious stuff that's going through. I'm through the House of Representatives and
the Senate. The Senate is poised to debate that in February.
Right, right. Yeah. And I hope
and this article in today's LA Times California section.
Right, I didn't see that, but I know the. You know, we're all probably familiar with the legislation passed in the House to make a felony to be an illegal immigrant in the United States. This would change things quite a bit. Yeah, this is a very dangerous situation. I don't know that would really pass the Senate or be signed by George Bush, but you know, if the hysteria gets loud enough, as Gilchrist and Barbara Coe want it to be, you know, maybe it will, and that then we have some we have a whole new dynamic in this country.
He wants the, Bush might not sign it because he wants the Latino vote.
Yeah, that may be part of it, but I think it's because corporations need and want the immigrant labor. You know, in Canada in Canada, these same immigrants that we're rejecting are welcome. They are being invited there, and it's being made easy for them to get their papers to stay there and work. The corporations want these workers. They need the workers. It isn't true that there are people here, generally speaking, who would take those jobs. There's a need for more workers in the kinds of jobs that they're offering. And they want a labor force that they can keep. You know, they want to beat them with a stick a little bit, but not beat them to the point where they're actually not here anymore. They want to keep them down and keep them unorganized and ununionized and as cheap labor. And so there's a bill by Kennedy and McCain, which is a little more labor friendly. But all these programs, like these Bracero programs and so on, all these and the allowed illegal immigration, all this has been really just a form of semi-slave labor. You know, it's a wage slavery, and that's something that Bush and the corporations want.
It's nothing new, right? I mean, on your website, you've looked at the citrus wars in Orange County, where the police sided with the developers, with the corporations, and
with the growers who were very powerful at that time. We're talking about in the 30s,
right? 30s, the Orange Grove growers, right?
Yeah,
and crackdown on workers.
Exactly. Yeah, shoot to kill was the order by the sheriff. Yes, at that time, right? There's very, very intense struggles going on in Orange County and Los Angeles County and elsewhere in the state at that time.
How about this whole and the history of, you interviewed also on your website, that you put on your website, a professor at UC Irvine.
Gilbert Gonzalez, yeah.
Yes, about the century of kind of
empire
migration
building. Yeah.
From Mexico, and how the U.S. Had a huge impact on that.
Right, and he's a much better person to have on about that, obviously, but his theory basically is that, and he documents it very well along with Raul Fernandez, the co-author, how U.S. corporate imperialism over the last century has disrupted the and controlled much of the economy in Mexico, and under NAFTA as the latest phase of that has caused this need for immigrants to leave and come up here, and so they've been pushed up here, due to the fact that Mexico is not an economically sovereign country. You know, people here, the anti-immigrant people here, talk about the need to have maintain American sovereignty. Well, that's not the real problem. The real problem is that Mexico is not sovereign. It's not sovereign because the United States controls it economically. It has invaded Mexico over the past 100 years and controls its economy, basically. Some of that's from Europe too, but and you know, this has to do with the global economy and everything now. So this is the problem. And he's saying that until that issue is settled, there's going to be a continuation of this immigration controversy, and one of the issues that the Gilchrist people talk about is, well, the Mexicans aren't assimilating. Well, so many are coming here right now that, in some respects, that's true, because so many are coming that they don't have time to learn the language. So there's always new groups coming in that don't know the language, and so on, and that's scary to people like Gilchrist. But that's happening because of the economic situation. It's not because it's not something you can just blame on Mexico. It has to be blamed primarily on the United States.
Is there any common ground between the, you know, anti-immigration people and the pro-immigration people?
There's some when it comes to some workers' issues and some and anti-corporate actions or beliefs. But there's a little different spin on each side to that. So the anti-immigrant people, they talk about the evil corporations too, and they even throw in a token concern for exploitation of the immigrant workers. But they see this more as a plot by Vicente Fox in Mexico, and they have a racist bent to what they're saying too, because they're really a large theme is that they don't want to see all these non-English signs, you know, whether it's Spanish or Vietnamese or whatever. Whereas the other side is talking more about U.S. imperialism, but they often aren't talking about that either. And that's one thing mm-hmm. Gonzalez points out, that they just see this as these are just people trying to live out the American dream here and so on and so forth, and they miss the larger issue, which is the economic imperialism there, and actually end up having common ground with their political enemies in their mutual misunderstanding of the issue.
Well, on that note, we have to end our interview here with John Earle of OCOrganizer.com, the publisher of that website and emerging newspaper. Thank you very much, John.
Thank you.
So that was John Earle with the OC Organizer, and we will be ending the show, Subversity, here on KUCI, here on KUCI 88.9 FM in Irvine. The opinions expressed on the show were not necessarily those of the Regents of the University of California, nor the management of KUCI. Tomorrow at 8 o'clock, listen again at KUCI to Weekly Signals, where Jennifer Harbury, the author of Truth, Torture, and the American Way, The History and Consequences of U.S. Involvement in Torture, will be interviewed by Mike Casper and Nathan Callahan here on KUCI Weekly Signals at 8 o'clock on KUCI tomorrow, in honor of the election of the socialist mayor, no, president, sorry, of Chile, from a survivor of the Pinochet years. This week saw the election of socialist president of Chile, Michelle Bachelet. we will play you some lyrics from Chile by Victor Jara.